everyone. Welcome to the Reputation Made Easy podcast. Today is the episode 23, and we did speak a lot, spreadsheets to strategy, making ropers work for you. Today, I am joined by Himanshi. Hello. It was a really good session. Actually, for the ones you don't know, it was Himanshi's first episode, and she was absolutely brilliant. But we did speak a lot, obviously, about ropers. We touched what are the common problems, the challenges, and any, I don't know, practical tips. But we spoke a lot about ropers. What's your favorite matter?
I think we spoke about accountability. We spoke about ownership, which is one of the most important thing when you are actually building a roper. We spoke about how organization, you know, struggle with, they have a major debate of between spreadsheets or having a software, but the distinction lies somewhere else. The distinction lies understanding their own business, understanding their own processing activities. So this is something I really enjoy talking about. And I think this is something that most organizations really need to understand and not think this is just a legal requirement and make it an administrative work rather than make it more valuable and know what template really will help them rather than just borrowing a template from a multinational company and it doesn't suit their own organization. So I think that's really an interesting take we took.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And without further delay, we will leave it to the episode. We hope you enjoy it and have a really nice weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. I am joined as a very special guest, Himanshi. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
I'll give you a floor in a couple of minutes, but just a couple of bits before we crack on. So we will share with you our privacy notice. We will exactly say how DPPs will use your information in here. And if you do have anything to say or any complaint, please contact us in our regards. Don't forget that this podcast is CPD credit. So if you do want to claim your credits, if as well later share with you the links. And finally, because obviously this podcast today is about ropers and about spreadsheets, we have a roper training coming up. And I'm sure that Eve will as well share with you the details of the training side. But we'll be very glad to have you on board for this. But without further delay, hello. It's really nice to have you here.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
That's really good. So I'm sure that people already know you from the articles. And obviously, if we have anyone that is also by your services, but if you want to introduce yourself a little bit.
Of course.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kit. Hello, everyone. I'm Himanshi, a data protection consultant at Data Protection People. I've been with the team long enough or not,
long enough,
not but I believe Kate definitely have a lot of faith in me, and she believes that this is the time to push me, throw me into the podcast fire. So I'm here, but I'm really, really excited to be part of this podcast, especially because, of course, our podcast comes under amongst top three.
Yes. Yeah.
Amongst top three. And of course, I mean, it's on trend right now. And also, we are going to discuss one of my favorite topics that I really, really love to chat about. So, yes.
Yeah, that's why you actually were my chosen one. I was like, Charlotte, please don't bully Himanshi as much as you do with mine. And I said, oh, no, I'm sure that Charlotte will be absolutely fine today. But without further delay, before we crack on with the topic that I know that is absolutely definitely your expertise in here, very few things coming up in the news, actually. But one of the things that I would like to talk about a little bit is actually about the charitable soft opt-in. So there was something that we've seen in the news, actually today when we were preparing ourselves for the podcast. It was very, very recently. There was a kind of a debate that came about the soft opt-in. So the new rules, as we know, allow charities to send fundraising emails and texts without consent in certain circumstances, so relying on soft opt-in. And one of those conditions is that when the charity originally collected someone's contact details, the person must have given a clear opportunity to opt out of receiving those communications. However, apparently there is an issue on the new recent guidance from the fundraising regulator that appears to suggest that charities may be able to apply the soft opt-in to existing supporters during a later contact details update exercise, even if they were not giving an opt-out when their details were first collected. So obviously there is a clash, I would say, from the guidance given, not only from the law, because I think with the law is quite straightforward in what they trying to aim and actually what they say, but as well in terms of the guidance that once the ICO provided after, because the charities, the soft opt-in was approved and is implemented since February this year, but the ICO guidance was released and now the fundraising regulator did release their one. But the legislation seems to say you can only rely on the charitable soft opt-in if the individual had the opportunity to opt out when you originally collected their contact details. But now we have, and the ICO followed these lines, but now we have the fundraising regulator that obviously is the regulator of the charities saying, actually, giving the chance to actually, if you contact supporters later and give them an opportunity to opt out during a contact details update exercise, so sending an email, oh, we are just checking your preferences, can you update your contact details, you might be then be able to rely on soft opt-in. I think this is quite intriguing, isn't it? Because that's definitely a clash on guidances in here, isn't it?
It's interesting. And I think you've got another reason to hate ICO.
Yeah.
It's not very clear, and neither the fundraising guidelines. But I do believe that if users' rights are respected, mm-hmm. as we always see with data protections, they are informed and they're given the opt-out or unsubscribe option. Mm-hmm. Then I think few emails where people have genuinely, the supporters have genuinely shown interest in the past as well, that they're interested in the charity, they're interested in giving the funds, mm-hmm. etc. So I believe that should be reasonable. Sending few emails would be reasonable. However, I mean, again, there's two sides to it. If they go back to their old records that wherein they have never obtained consent from anybody,
mm-hmm.
then how are they ensuring transparency? How they're ensuring opt-out option? And if they're going to, they're going to embed this from now for the new customers, mm-hmm. then again, they're going to send a marketing email first
exactly.
to actually obtain the opt-out. So I'd say it's a very interesting debate.
Mm-hmm. I would completely agree with you. And I think you touched on a really interesting point. It is the difference between the service message and the mm-hmm. direct message and a marketing message, I would say. And actually, back on that, is really interesting. One of the cases on this debate, what was mentioned, that was back in 2017. Hmm. There was a Honda, the car's brand, was fined for sending emails asking people whether they wanted to continue receiving marketing. And they used that communication to update their preferences and update their contact details. Hmm. And actually, they were fined by the ICO because the ICO's view was actually, this is a marketing message and this was unsolicited. So therefore, you'll be fined for that. So actually, we do have, and just to kind of conclude, if this kind of broader interpretation is correct, then charities may be able to continue engaging with those supporters after carrying out this update exercise, even if they didn't have anything to back them up. But I think from obviously a cautious perspective, that is exactly, I would say that on the consultancy side that we need to do, let's definitely follow the principle, follow the literal views from the ICO, and do not send, you cannot send a marketing message that obviously picking up on the case, saying that updating the preferences just to create a permission for future marketing. So let's follow what the ICO says. I know that this debate is being escalated. I'm absolutely sure that probably this will come up in a couple of weeks as, okay, warning, this is our interpretation right now. So very keen to understand, but definitely we are seeking for some sort of clarity in this regard, right?
I believe that isn't it always a debate between new systems, new processes, but the principles and the rules are still the same. It's just a test how you're going to apply it
absolutely
to the new processes.
So, and in the end of the day, actually, then I think with our background, and I'm sure that within you in law, you felt the same. And isn't even in a daily basis, obviously the law sets the tone, sets the rules, the guidance tries to provide the clarity and the understanding in how these rules should be followed. But in the end of the day, is the power of argumentation, isn't it? Like sometimes the law can be so generic and so broad that you actually have room to go a little bit and try to adapt it to how you want it to be then. And I think this is exactly what the fundraising regulator tried to do is, okay, we might have found a gap within, I don't know, the law, the legislation itself, but even the guidance provided by the ICO. So therefore, we will try to see if this works. And if they do, amazing, because now give us more chance actually to contact the people, because in the end of the day, the main goal is to contact the most people as possible to obtain money for fundraising purposes and obviously following the charitable purpose. But let's see. I think it's a quite interesting debate, definitely, because myself and Kane will have some news about charities and the charitable purpose for soft opt-in in the next couple of weeks. So actually stay tuned. But on the other news, Meta is already back. And this time is about the monitoring an employee's program. So according to reports and a couple of news from BBC, Guardian, etc., Meta has paused an internal program that was collecting extensive information from employees' laptops to help improve and train AI systems. So this monitoring apparently included keystrokes, screen content, internal chats, AI prompts, performance-related information. And these just came up as a controversial topic and a hot topic back, because when a configuration error allegedly made the collected data accessible across all the company and everyone had access to all these records, rather than restricting the access to a very limited group that was part of this research and this training kind of the analysis. So I think there are kind of a bit of problems here, isn't it? But I do think, obviously, there was a breach. But actually, I would say that my main concern, because for me, Meta, as Charlotte is saying, our favorite word, is definitely on the news, if not daily, at least weekly. But I think organizations should be collecting this amount of employee data in the first place, particularly for these purposes. It's quite intriguing, isn't it? Because you are... What is all your expectations? And from what I read from the news, and I had the chance to read the executive summary from the report, they were not expecting this. They did not have the expectation of this happening, and did not knew. So I feel uncomfortable with this. I do feel a little.
I mean, I believe that this is another reminder for us that employee data is as much as important as customer data. I believe that organizations are mostly focusing on protecting the customer data and then not really securing the employee data.
Mm-hmm.
I've also seen that data breach is only considered when hacker is from outside. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Like external hacker, that's the data breach. But when something happens internally, they do not worry that much. Okay, the data remained internally. The data was just seen by the employees.
Absolutely.
But even the inappropriate internal access, it can be just as significant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm thinking. I mean, it's just important that we have to protect employees' data as much. Of course, there has to be a balance between how much of the data you want to leverage to train AI models and then how you're going to secure the employee rights as well.
Absolutely. And one thing that I thought it was interesting was that apparently once the employees were made aware of it was not even from a privacy notice perspective or a statement, but actually the IT systems or the IT guys coming up within their laptops and they came across with these concerns, they shared those concerns in the first place. And they were not just about the security, but actually from the trust, confidence, and even the privacy perspective. And I mean, the monitoring side of things from the employee's perspective is always, when I think about the monitoring of employees, and it's a very thin line between monitoring and surveillance.
Yeah.
And obviously, when we're talking about, first instance, in the employment perspective, there is a natural imbalance of power between the employee and the employer. So automatically, this makes the discussion already in balance, but the nature is what it is, unfortunately. So that means that in terms, if you do still want to carry on this, you need to make sure that on your side, you have the expectations very clear, probably even like that, let them know, hear them clear their concerns, and then having balanced all this together, make them an informed decision. As we are aware with Meta, this is definitely not what happened and definitely not what happened in the past, because they have definitely clear issues about transparency and how did they deal with our data. But I think this is quite important. I think is I don't know, it's just it makes me feel a little unsettled, because actually Meta is already using its power as an organizational, and they are using this using the employee data, because obviously as in the customer side, as you were mentioning, because it's an outside, probably will go up to the news and people will say some concerns and they will like being on the news, etc. all the time. But because it's internally, they probably feel more protected by doing it. And it's fine, because we are just making our systems better, probably training you to further speed. I don't agree with this perspective, and I don't think this is absolutely correct at all.
I believe that Meta is a company that is built on data,
yes,
and is not able to secure worker monitoring systems itself.
Yes.
So I think that's a reminder for us to know, you know, like how far we'd really have to go when we are leveraging like internal data for AI deployment. And I think we really need to give importance to data minimization, access controls, transparency. Even in the Meta case, I believe if at all, they would have chosen volunteers for
yes.
this thing, or, you know, anonymized the data that they were actually using for AI models.
Mm-hmm.
They could have used anonymizations and only collected AI prompts, because I don't know why keystrokes or mouse movements were really necessary
mm-hmm.
to collect.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these are the things that really take us back to data protection and see like, this is how we have to balance. Okay, security is there, privacy should be like, privacy rights should be respected. And then of course, if you have to build your AI model, even if the volunteers were like 500 in Meta,
would
have given a lot good results as well, rather
Absolutely.
Than just taking every employee into consideration.
Absolutely. I think in the end of the day, always when this, I heard about this, I think the safest state is often the data that you never collect, because there is no risk involved. You are not collecting it. Like, just stay away from the extra collection. But because I'm aware of the time, shall we jump to our topical session?
Yes.
So the topic session today is spreadsheets to strategy, how to make ROPA that works actually for you. And I think there are loads of everyone, organizations in principle will be up to have the ROPA, even if it's not a requirement, they will have one, because it can be very useful, I would say. But I'm very keen to hear your thoughts about this, actually. But I work as a data protection consultant for almost 3 years now. And every single time I mention ROPA, particularly to clients, smaller, bigger, medium, they have such a bad reputation. They are seen as a monster, and they just want to stay away from it. And I don't want to do the ROPA. It's not a priority. Why do I need to do it? It's hard to manage everything. So I don't know, why do you think ROPAs are being so bad? Because I do like a ROPA. I do like a ROPA.
I'm in the queue for that. I like ROPAs, and I think that really gives you a lot of context. But I don't really think that people really dislike the ROPA itself.
Mm-hmm.
They dislike the process, or they think that it's just filling up spreadsheets with a lot of departments and a lot of processing activities, 80 plus entries, who's going to read it and who's going to make sure that, you know, it is accurate. And then actually finding a balance between, should we go for a spreadsheet or should we, you know, spend money for expensive softwares? I think that's the complexity wherein people start disliking the ROPAs.
Absolutely.
But I think that's a myth. That's a myth.
Absolutely. And, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think as well, you are making like a very, you are making a very good point, actually, that is when we start and how do we start it? Because we have the Article 30 that actually sets out the requirements, and we have obviously paragraph 1 for controllers, paragraph 2 for processors. Expectations are a little bit different, but in the main idea is actually the same. It is how do you process your personal data? What are the purposes? Let me understand as a business, what do you do? Literally, I think in a very summary, I'm summarized, like this is the main thing with the ROPES. But I think when we are reading like the ICO guidance, there is no every, as soon as I'm concerned, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but there is no way or any thoughts about the format. So I think sometimes the people struggle a little bit. And how do we start? How should we start a ROPE exercise? How can we start with this? What are your thoughts around it? What do we do?
I believe that organizations really feel that ROPE is very complex. You know, it's hard to understand. But I think it's very easy. If you don't see it as a legal requirement, but you just have to do a tick box exercise, complete Article 30 requirement, and you see that you really have to understand your business.
Yes.
How the data is flowing. Each business should know what their processing activities are, how the data is flowing. You understand your processing activities and it works for you in a day-to-day activity. I think that's what will be a good ROPA.
Mm-hmm.
And I've experienced this a lot of times. With my client engagements, I see that they'll be like, okay, let's start with the policies. Let's update the policies or build the policies first. And ROPA can be, you know, we can start later because it's going to take a lot of time. So they treat it as a last exercise. But I think ROPA is something that really gives you a context, really helps you determining when you need a DPIA in case of subject access requests. It's very helpful in subject access requests or, you know, ensuring like where the privacy risks really are.
Absolutely.
So I think understanding the business first, understanding the processing activities first, it should be like the important should be the starting point, and as it will give you context as well.
Yeah, I think because obviously, as you know, the protection people, we do offer consultancy services, but we are as well our outsourced DPOs, which means that we have clients coming back to us and asking for our assistance on that. And one of the things that I think about is we need to know about this organization. How are we obviously external, but we need to have a level of insight and feedback as we were part of the team internally speaking. And when I think the policies and procedures are really relevant as well, one of the starting points, just because obviously it's just setting out the responsibilities and allocation responsibilities. But the ROPE itself is the mirror of how the organization works. Because if it's actually properly done and includes all the relevant information in a reasonable way, because one of the things that I come about is the most is how granular is granular and how shall we set the tone and the balance between what is the information that actually we need to include in there or what is actually too much. But if we have the document with us, and if I'm an external person that we are in the beginning of our relationship with the client, we'll be able to understand exactly how do you do and manage things. What are the third parties that you are engaged with? What is your processes? Where is the data is collected? If there are any problems, because the main issue here, and sometimes I come, and I'm sure that you will share the same experience with me on this, is I can come to three situations. One, people say we have a ROPA, and then they come with information assets registers. The second, we have ROPAs that have 150 roles for every single department and is the biggest thing I've ever seen. And they have, for example, HR department and then 7, 8, 9 purposes of the processing for just recruitment, for example. And then the third probably is, but it's like, it can be a very complex. Trying to mirror what is actually a ROPA that is compliant, but actually is not the truth, does not correspond with actually the organization is facing. For example, a lot of what I've seen is in a lawful basis is, we are relying on contract, performance of the contract, legal obligation or consent, but is that or is wrong, or actually they went to ChatGPT, copy and paste, but actually is not exactly what they are doing. So sometimes can be a little bit not aligned with the reality, isn't it?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I believe for ROPA, organizations are really in debate and in struggle with, should we adopt a certain kind of a template or could we go for a software? But I believe that every organization, Rupa is not same for all the organization. Mm-hmm. It has to be adapted and implemented based on their own organization, own processing activities, rather than saying, okay, ICO have given this template. Oh, Barclays Bank has this kind of a template. Let's adopt that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if it's just a SME and they're adopting Barclays Bank template, it, of course, it's going to be complex. Of course, they're going to be like, oh, this is too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe always having a template that, which is very easy for you to understand that this is my business, this is my processing activity. The example that you shared that they'll have multiple processing activities just for recruitment. This is something that I saw.
It's always the recruitment.
For me, I saw it for data protection.
We had
25 entries just for data protection, and every single data subject right was listed separately.
Okay.
But that could have been just been concise and fit into one category, maybe data rights management, and then data governance can be DPIs, data contracts, etc. So I do understand that after the templates, the another thing that they come up with is granularity, how granular it should be. And I think, again, this again depends upon your processing activities. So I believe that so far, you are able to understand your own business, your own processing activities, that, okay, this is my activity, this is I share with, you know, if there is an international transfer, this is how I secure, and these are the data subjects that are involved in the processing activity.
Mm-hmm.
If that is clear, you're able to analyze those things and you're able to use it in your day-to-day activities for responding to SARS, doing DPIAs, seeing privacy risk, or suppliers reviews, I think it's good. It should be good for that.
You are making a very interesting point, actually. One that I'll definitely highlight is the fact that Europa is definitely the name of this session, actually, is when Europa is actually well done, can be used in a very strategic way, particularly to identify, for example, high-risk processing activities, and identify the need for a DPIA, even, for example, because already we come across these situations all the time, don't we, in terms of we already are processing this sort of data and unfortunately DPIA was not carried out.
Yeah.
So actually the ROPA gives you the overview in why this should be carried out because of the suppliers, because of the risks that involved. And the ROPA is a very good, absolutely amazing sort of informational on that note. But as well as... we have internally a couple of, well, now months ago, Phil was delivering training and the topic was ROPAs. And actually we would navigate as the people that actually know Phil a lot about how ROPAs started back in the 90s is in the topic of discussion. So the story around the ROPAs. And then we navigate in how should we build a ROPA. And it was an internal exercise. And it was interesting to see that I thought this was to be a topic or at least a matter that would be a straightforward answer. This is how I do it, and this is actually consistent, and that was not the case. So as far as I remember, there were the main bit that came to my mind were two. One, the fact that there are loads of people, and I'm here, I'm very interested to hear your thoughts, David and Sarah. I know that you are making a point in the chat that you're actually both doing separately the process on the ROPA. So please join us if you want to. That they are against the Excel spreadsheets. So there are loads of individuals, well, if they have platforms to actually to put the ROPA like OneTrust, etc., well, absolutely fine. But when we don't have those tools, I'm interested and intrigued to see what would be your go-to? Because there are loads of individuals that Excel spreadsheets is absolutely no. Actually, they do prefer Word documents to actually do the ROPA. And the other one is, if we're building and the ROPA, and imagine, for example, recruitment would be our purpose of the processing and why we're collecting all this information. But there can be a more onboarding employee, shall we say, can be different lawful basis, can be different retention periods, for example, and even different organizational measures, security measures, and suppliers. So what would you say in, should we have a role, for example, using the Excel spreadsheet as an example, will you be the person that will say for every, I don't know, different sort of information than a different line? Or would you separate it by processing activities? Because we have both in here. We have people that do, well, recruitment, successful individuals or unsuccessful, two different separate lines, because the retention period is probably different and therefore should be different. But we have as well people that defend, well, why should we separate these lines? Because actually it's all about the same and we can make it clear in the same role that this is actually different retention periods. So I think the way we build the rope is as well, I don't know.
I mean, if we keep it focused to meaningful processing mm-hmm. activities and linking updates to normal business changes, and it is more manageable. For example, if you mentioned that we have different kinds of processing activities for successful, unsuccessful, mm-hmm. so far as the retention periods are different and the purpose... Maybe the purpose is the same, of course. The retention period is different, if the risks are different and they might hide the major risk, like privacy risk, then I think it can be divided into multiple activities.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, then it can be combined into one activity mm-hmm. rather than making it more granular. We can just have it concise in one activity. Recruitment for unsuccessful, successful can be combined if it doesn't hide major risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I completely understand. I think the issues definitely I must say that on this side, me and Imanchi, we are definitely spreadsheet girls in these sides. Definitely we are not the ones on the Word documents at all. But I think the key word is that, isn't it, is manageable. Hmm. I think it needs to be manageable because even if all the information is within this document, actually if it's mirror all the reality of the business, et cetera, but actually it's unmanageable. You can't understand what you're going through. We can't include all this information. You don't understand the flow of the data. It's impossible. It will be impossible because it's a task. It's a task actually that... should be, and that's why we should build the rope in very first early stages, because it's a live document, isn't it? It's not just a set tone as soon as it's completed, it's done. Because the document itself can change in a couple of hours. It can change again and you need to update it. So I think it's one of the things, isn't it? Is how manageable it is, how understandable it is, and who actually having ownership by the document. Because and I think this happens a lot on the policies and the procedures and anything data protection related is, this sounds like data protection, so this is up to the data protection leader, this is up to the DPO, and that's it. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with this. I think that the DPO or the data protection leader, the privacy officer, should have the last word or the last say of this, but people within all the departments and that these process owners should be definitely the process owners, should be definitely the people responsible to manage the roper. I think that they should take over ownership, and sometimes we don't see that. We definitely don't see that happening.
I completely agree with that. I think whenever we talk about poor roper, I think that is not a problem. That is basically a symptom. Mm-hmm. That tells us a lot about what's going on internally. Mm-hmm. Maybe the departments don't communicate with each other, no clear ownership. And ownership is the biggest thing when we are doing the roper. I think a lot of times it will be like it's privacy team's responsibility. They will complete. But I really wonder, okay, one time the privacy team is able to complete, have, you know, tick mark the legal requirement that Absolutely. They have to do. But that's becoming more of an administrative work rather than making it something that's going to be very valuable for the organization in their day-to-day activities. So for today, I can complete HR ROPA, but what if HR, there's process change, there is control change, ownership change, nobody will remember. If they've never seen one ROPA, never completed one ROPA, they will mm-hmm. never know that they really have to update the ROPA, that this is the trigger that they have to update the ROPA. So I think ownership is very important and every business should own their ROPA.
Absolutely.
Because I do believe that every business has their own, like they have a very good understanding of their business. Mm-hmm. So if they are responsible for the ROPA, it wouldn't be very hard to manage. Plus, it'll be like a living document, as we said.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, absolutely. And This cover actually comes up. I know that you have done in the past a piece of work for one of your clients around obviously building the rope and drafting the rope. We have internally, we do use the rope as exercise to educational purposes. We do like to kind of raise awareness to all the process owners involved within these exercises. And to be honest, I've been actually actively working, and you helped me with that as well, helping one of our clients in putting together a rope. And unfortunately, the ownership was inexistent. It was a very big organization, actually, and they thought all the process owners, shall we say, or heads of departments, they think that this is definitely an exercise, and because it's a protection related, so therefore it's a protection leader. So he's having loads of difficulties in putting the rope up together, because obviously he's an internal individual, but he does not know what is going on in every single department. Mm-hmm. And every single time that he tries to get some sort of feedback from individual insights, they close the doors to say, oh, well, we'll do it later. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just do it, do it, do it. And what unfortunately came across was he's using ChatGPT to putting together the rope. And, you know, obviously you know me very well, and you know that in terms of AI, I'm definitely not the biggest fan. I always try to, okay, let's see if we can do this, but I do appreciate it and be very efficient and effective. And actually, I use this as an example to see, let's actually understand how this can be workable and how much time actually is safe. And it worked. So example was, is did not have much time. Unfortunately, internally, there was no much engagement from individuals from the departments. So he just gave the ChatGPT some sort of inputs about the organization, very public information, very generic information, and tried, okay, for this department, what are definitely the purpose of the processing? Give me just some examples for me to try to build some sort of document. And I will be back to the people on their side and see what they think, and it be able to help them as well. And they were more engaging, so it worked. So this for me to say, obviously, well, giving just sharing a little bit of experience on this client side, that he was struggling a lot. And I'm sure that audience, please just put your hands up if you are struggling as well with this, particularly on the ownership side of things. They were struggling, and actually the AI tools in this regard helped them. And then we try to have an approach of more, okay, now that we have this populated, you did it this, let's jump on the calls and let's use these calls on our side to make them aware. Because sometimes it's just a lack of awareness, and they think, oh, this is not my problem. It's not in my job description, so why should I care about this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I really agree with your point that it does make sometimes the job more efficient, mm-hmm, and easy. And how this is sometimes the way that we can approach the ROPA. The other way to approach ROPA, which is very easy and which makes it very valuable, and I think that really works too, that rather than, like, whenever I have workshops with the clients, yeah, I'll always be like, okay, we don't have, this is not, don't consider it as a legal requirement. Just say whatever you feel, you know, what will make sense, and I'll just put it down in the ROPA. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Easy language. There is, I mean, we don't really have a rule. We don't really have a template as well. We can follow what is more valuable, what will be more valuable, and what is more understandable for us. And with ownership, I think workshops are something that's really, really helpful. So everyone understands their own business, but only when, you know, we have workshops, we conduct, mm-hmm, workshops, that's where everyone starts connecting the dots.
Absolutely.
One of the very interesting things that happened with me, with one of my clients, I went to the marketing team and they were like, we don't do anything with the personal data. We just send emails. That's all.
So they to know.
And then, like, I had to challenge them more. And then MailChimp, we discovered MailChimp.
Yeah.
We discovered that they do online competition on social media, and they collect that information and they store that information indefinitely. And then we discovered that they keep the opt-out list, and they send the information to sales, oh, and trading department as well. And then,
so there's something all personal, yeah, data there. No,
yeah. So just one simple process that they were explaining only during the workshops, and more challenges, we were able to discover, oh, multiple processes, multiple activities. So I think that's what makes it interesting and organizations or departments more engaging, and then understanding, okay, this is the process, this is what we really do in day-to-day life. And of course, only after those workshops, they were able to recall that they also click pictures of the winners.
Exactly.
And they post that. So it was not just emails, it was a lot more.
Yeah, I think it's a good exercise, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Because I even in today's, and I know that this information, people are way more aware of data protection, like, well, 10 years ago. But there are a lot of people still that think that personal data is just name, contact details, and this needs to be in a very kind of straightforward things that social media, photos, images, videos, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's not personal data, it's the information that probably aren't using for whatever, but it's not consuming personal data. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes when you do the ROPA, one of my favorite moments is when they realize, yes, good point. It's actually, it's personal data, because obviously we didn't find people. And they actually feel excited for it, because they feel like I'm part of the team. I'm part of actually this exercise actually makes sense. And it's real, I don't know, it's really good to see sometimes that people actually care as much as we do. And they feel so excited as we are talking about this. And actually, that's why I do like a really good rope, because sometimes starts as a struggle. But when things are, even if we're already ongoing relationship with clients and even in internally organizations, is something that sometimes can be time consuming, absolutely, but has so many beneficials allocated to it. It seems like it's just a document, but it's not. It's very good to do a gap analysis. It's very good to do a kind of a discovery from the organization itself. Can be used for kind of a risk management perspective, identifying gaps, higher risk processing activities, what we need, what we don't need. It's really good to identify retention periods, problems, et cetera, any concerns. And as well, to educate people, to kind of make them aware of what they are doing, any risks, educate them on the data protection. And that's why I really like ROPAs. And that is good. It's very, very, very good to have one in place. I had actually the chance to see what the ICO is about to say about this. And I know that I am not as well the biggest fan of the ICO, but actually on this note, I kind of have to say that they did a really good job on it. They have loads of links. They have loads of recommendations, examples. I will be able to share this with you. But now, because I'm aware of the time, I'm very intrigued to understand on your side. And I know that we touched a little bit around this session, but what does a good ROPA actually look like for you? What would you say?
I mean, for a good ROPA, first of all, as I've been mentioning already, that understanding the processing activities. Mm-hmm. If you are able to understand the processing activities, if you have clear ownership, if you can see the risks, if you can understand when to perform, when to perform a DPIS, mm-hmm. how to answer or respond to a SAR request. I think if you are able to understand, you are able to carry out your day-to-day activities, that's what a good ROPA will be.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I really like that. I think,
till the time it's working.
Yeah, it's useful. If it gives, always I put in my mind is, let's give it to someone, which obviously with interest on this area, and then actually have some time to have and to spare. But let's give to someone that actually has no interaction with this organization. Let's give them the document and let's see if they actually understand. If there was an auditor coming up to your organization, if they do see your ROPA right now the way it is, will they understand exactly what do you do, how you do it, and how do you manage? Do you have a policy obviously talks about ownership and easy to understand who is the owner of that relationship with that department and that the roles? And finally, is it clear enough for me, the version control? Is it clear for me to understand when was the last review? What were the changes? What did change? Because obviously, even now with the due changes, things will change within your processes, processings, etc. So if it's all including that document, regardless the format, regardless how you do it, if you are compliant with the requirements Article 30, I think that will be a real good ROPA.
I agree with that. And I think, as you mentioned, the DUA Act.
Yes.
a lot of organizations are implementing AI models now, Copilot, etc. And they'll be like, okay, we are actually complying with data protection. We have AI policy and we are actually carrying out the DPIA. And then you ask about, okay, what about the ROPA? And then there's a question mark. Oh, that we don't know. We haven't updated that.
We'll just say that. Probably the DPO will take care of it, so it's not our concern.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Where the risk lies, what the measures you're going to use, what the security measures that they're going to use. I think ROPA can really become helpful in that case.
Yeah, exactly. So I think on that note, we will leave it to it. Was absolutely amazing to have you here. Thank you so much. I hope I have you back very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you everyone for joining us today. It was absolutely lovely to see you and have a good Friday. Bye-bye. Thank you.